Do you really trust her to run this country for the next 4 years? How have the last 4 years gone under him? Well, your tax dollars are being funneled overseas into support illegal immigration. They've left our people behind, offering just $750 in aid, as if that's enough. With political insanity that we're living through, supply chain shortages, natural disasters, and the looming threat of another pandemic, you need to prepare your family now. The Wellness Company offers 5 critical medical kits packed with life-saving medications like ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, amoxicillin, Z-Pak, and more. Each kit is backed by Dr. Peter McCullough. Ordering is simple. Just a few clicks and it's delivered to your door. Head to twc.health/CDM and use code CDM to save up to $60 off plus free shipping. That's twc.health/CDM and use code CDM to save up to $60 off plus free shipping right now.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan. This is our Sunday Globalist Plainsight show. And today we're honored to have Julia Chiappetti, who is the president of the Annie Appleseed Project in Florida. And Julia, first of all, thank you for joining us today, because today is going to be we're going to talk about something, folks, that people don't want to talk about. And the word is cancer. And what we're seeing now since the COVID vaccination rollout in the last 3 years, we're seeing an increase of cancer all over the world. So, Julia, thank you for joining us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I just love you. I love your work and all you've done over these years. It's amazing. So thank you. You are the trailblazer. You've got the gumption, girl.
Well, thank you. But, this is not my bailiwick. This is yours, okay? Because you've lived this. Let's talk, because people get scared with the word cancer, all right? But we do see the numbers, increasing. We see that if people have cancer in their family and they didn't have cancer, if they got the shots, in some instances, it's not every single one, but in some instances, the dormant cancer has exploded. And it's not just one type of cancer somebody gets. I know some friends who have multiple cases of cancer. What are you finding? And let's just start with your personal story. You got cancer. You had breast cancer over 2 decades ago, and you chose not to follow some of your doctor's advice. And you looked for
it was the year. It was the year 2000. I was about to run a triathlon and traveling around the world, create like a crazy person, working, producing meetings and events. And I found a little lump on the outer edge of my right breast. Went to my gynecologist. She said, yeah, it feels different. Had a mammogram. Had just had a mammogram 2 months before. It's part of my annual checkup. Had the mammogram. The radiologist said, don't worry about it. It's nothing. I said, no, I it is something. I know it is. And I pretty much had to cry to get a biopsy. Had the biopsy. The next day, I get a call from the surgeon saying, I'm really sorry. I learned a very important lesson. I need to listen to my patients more. You have stage 2B infiltrating ductal carcinoma, very aggressive, very fast growing cancer, and you need to do something immediately. Sent me to the oncologist who said, double mastectomy, chemo, radiation, tamoxifen. So I left the office and prayed and decided that I was going to do research and become the CEO over my own body to try to figure out and get my brain around what it was I was dealing with. As I began to do my research, I then began to re-engage with my doctors, who essentially in Greenwich, Connecticut, told me that if I wasn't going to do chemo or radiation, that they were going to fire me from their practice and that I should not come back. And that I was going to die, is what they told me. And so I began my journey back then of becoming the CEO over my own body and meeting people, watching videos, going to conferences online, talking to doctors, going through the maze of alternative medicine, complementary, alternative medicine. And God put a guy in my life by the name of Mark Shawadi, who I was training with to do races. And he was a scientist and a transplant from Albany, New York to my area from GE. And he helped me navigate and ended up doing 2 months of research with me every single night and helped me to understand what was really going on in my body. So the long and short of it is I threw everything out in my house, got a dumpster, loaded everything, food, makeup, cleaning solutions, microwave, et cetera, and made the ground fertile for implementing what became my protocol, which was I was essentially doing the Gerson diet, raw food vegan, eating only anything from the dirt, all organic. And it was 20 things. It wasn't just one thing. And I was learning as I was going. And as I implemented this protocol, I had a second opinion at Sloan Kettering, pretty much the same as Greenwich Hospital. And then a cousin of mine who is a trailblazer in the wellness area called me and said, I have an appointment for you in Houston. You need to go see this doctor at MD Anderson Cancer Center. I went down there. But by the time I got there, it was 90 days beyond my diagnosis. And when I got there, they had all my files, all my criteria, all my blood work diagnostics. And I sat down at a round table with the doctors and PAs, and they said, okay, so we see who Julia was. We have all your records for the last 10 years. We see who you are now, but who do you want for the future? And I thought, whoa, this is like pretty amazing. Like they were actually including me in the conversation. And by the way, Julia, we don't know what you're doing, but your tumor markers and your blood work has improved about 85% since your initial biopsy. So tell us what it is you're doing. And so I was able to have this conversation with them, which was extremely encouraging to me. And here I was in Houston, all alone in this hospital, but I ended up having a lumpectomy. Mm-hmm. And came home and continued in my plan of care without turning back. And so my whole life stopped. I was engaged to be married before that guy left. I had to give up my stressful job of traveling around and producing meetings and events, which was part of my protocol. Ended up suffering a huge financial loss because I decided that I was going to take a year off. But somehow I had cancer, but somehow I was empowered and encouraged by how great. I couldn't imagine that I even had cancer because I felt so great doing what I was doing. So as an Italian growing up, any problem you had, my grandmother went to the garden and she made a concoction and a drink or a tea or a salve or something. And we ate from the dirt. We were poor. We grew up, eating from the garden. So I was pretty much going back to the garden. And I've learned a lot since then. So 2000, now it's 2004. In the middle of all that, I wrote a book called Breast Cancer, The Notebook, to share with others newly diagnosed what I had learned. I had piles and piles of notebooks of notes and, from doctor's visits and going to conferences and meeting people and reading. And so I put it in a little condensed form and published this book and as a gift, basically self-published it and wanted to give back so that if somebody was newly diagnosed, they would have in their hands the clinical and environmental aspects of the disease. And a couple of things I learned that were shocking to me, shocking. Number one, 85% of breast cancers are not hereditary. They're environmental. Environmental aspects, diet, nutrition, sleep, alkalinity, water, air, air, water, et cetera. So you know, the keys are, you know, you've got to be alkaline in order to be healthy. You have to, you need to be in a high oxygen environment. You need to be in a hydrated environment. These are all keys to life, right? Our cells need to be hydrated. Our brains need oxygen. So the other thing that I learned was that mammography is a risk for breast cancer. So I came across this study, and I'm going to read it to you because I brought it out this morning to make sure I had the right quote for you. Professor Samuel Epstein, MD, professor of environmental and occupational medicine at the University of Illinois School of Public Health, chairman of the Cancer Prevention Coalition, pointed out in his abstract the sobering fact that over a period of 10 years premenopausal, so I was in my 40s, women undergoing annual mammograms receive almost half the dose of radiation that was measurable within a mile of the Hiroshima bomb epicenter. That's huge.
It is huge because a lot of people, if you don't have your annual mammogram or 6 months or whatever, people think that that's irresponsible when in fact they don't know the side effects of that. That's true.
Well, they don't. And insurance companies are not paying for ultrasounds and MRIs. They're only paying for mammograms. So it's this circle of money and harm and, you know, what happened to first do no harm. So that was a sobering fact to me. So I haven't had a mammogram since then. I found my own tumor through self-examination that my gynecologist taught me when I turned 30 and said, here's your birthday present. This is going to save your life someday. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I kind of knew. So that was sobering. Then I started realizing all the other risk factors, you know, in our food. And just the other last month, there was an article in the New York Post about 100 chemicals that have been found in food packaging that ignite breast cancers, in particular the breast. So, and then, you know, you think about those chemicals, they're in our clothing, they're in packaging. You have firemen in New York City who have a huge risk of breast cancer, and there has been a sudden increase in breast cancers in New York City since 9/11 with all the chemicals in the air and also the clothing that they wear. So men are getting breast cancer also.
Let's back up here because it's important for part of the story is and I was actually very surprised in the last month, pardon me, when Elle McPherson came out and talked about that she, you know, she was diagnosed with cancer and then she chose to take care of herself with alternative cancer methods, right, to address it. And she is now in remission. And I think the thing that surprised me was how many people came out and were angry at her and calling her saying irresponsible, and as if there should be no space to have an alternative conversation medically, which I find absolutely fascinating because I do not believe in the medical divinity of the white coat any more than I believe in the religious divinity of the Catholic collar. So, you know, having said that, what is it about it that people don't want you when you're, for instance, when your doctors fired you as a patient in Greenwich? What is it about it that people decide that, no, you're not going to listen to me, and hence, vada boom, you're out of here?
Well, I'm glad you brought it up. Well, it's mind-boggling. It's fear. It's really, I think it's fear that they have, this is all they know. This is what they were taught. They had four hours of nutrition and, you know, nutritional and supplemental education in their medical degrees. They just don't know. Take a look at most of the doctors that you go and visit. I mean, 80% of them don't even look healthy. It's fear. It's total fear. They just don't know how to treat you. And when I read Elle's story, that was my story. I had friends and colleagues in business that I had to put on pause because they were so negative, and they told me I was crazy, that I was a quack, I didn't know what I was talking about, better get my will in order. I mean, it was just, it was so negative. And I mean, she's a high profile person. My experience was my little network of people. But this is commonplace in our, in the medical field today.
Now you have, you're globally attached to other people with like-minded feelings about this. Do you think that this is more criticism in the United States?
Yes.
And do you think it's because we are so addicted to the pills and the operations and the money side of medicine?
Yes. And I also think that it's a propaganda machine. I think that, you know, marketing 101, when I was taking my first, you know, course in marketing, you know, you repeat a message 100 times and it eventually gets into somebody's brain. It's no different than, you know, listening to music when in the 70s, when we played records incessantly, and we know every single lyric of every song in the 70s, right? In the 80s, it's the same thing. People just get, they believe that. It's almost really, it's sickening to me that we look at cancer and people actually say, oh, well, I've only got 36 weeks of radiation and I've only got 12 more weeks of chemo. As if it's so commonplace that it's normal and natural to poison and burn our bodies over and over and over. And nobody is talking about the result of that. So the secondary cancers from the radiation, the chemotherapy, and the drugs. I mean, tamoxifen alone is what they give everybody who has breast cancer, right? That is outlawed in a lot of countries outside mm-hmm. of the United States because of the secondary aspect of endometrial cancer that is huge and high with taking that drug. And it might not be a week later, but it could be 10 years later. I know several people who took that drug 20 years later, got secondary cancers, ovarian, endometrial, and uterine cancers. It's really fear that anything different or anything alternative is going to force people to have to take a hard look at it and say, gee, maybe we were wrong. Maybe, or maybe we should incorporate another viewpoint into the conversation. It's just this arrogance and pride over it.
So if somebody get, what are the numbers? Because you guys get fed a lot of numbers. What do the numbers look like now, pre-COVID, post-COVID?
So I can tell you that post-COVID, and I've read 3 reports, abstracts that came out of Europe, the top 7 cancer categories are up 300 to 900% since the COVID vaccine
rollout
episode. I guess we'll call it an episode, right? Mm-hmm. I have people, we have our phones do not stop ringing. We are a small organization providing education and advocacy and referrals to doctors in our network who do pro bono work and do consults for people. And when they call our line, it's usually we are their last hope to find healing and to find information. I personally know 10 women who have had anywhere from 10 to 20 new tumors since they had the COVID vaccine. And our own founder passed away. She was doing great. She was fine. She was living with metastatic disease for 25 years. She had the COVID vaccine, and within a year, she was gone. And she had just her body was just filling up with tumors and cancer. I've seen young kids. The age of onset has gone down from 50 to 30, and then as young as 13. You have a sudden rise in brain cancers for children and adults, lymphoma, leukemia, prostate cancer, pancreatic cancer. Colon cancer is huge. That's up like 900%. And then, you know, the glandular cancers, the breast and the prostate cancers. So, and that goes for pets too. I mean, you know, because there's the environmental aspect and then the vaccine aspect. As RFK is telling us, RFK Jr. is telling us, our food is killing people. The vaccines are making us sick. So where do we go? from here.
So if somebody is diagnosed with cancer today, is it, have you found in your research, if they have cancer, should they not get the vaccination? Is because it might ignite some dormant cancer in their body?
Well, personally, from what I've read and what I've experienced on the ground, on the front lines, the answer to that is a resounding yes, because it's not a vaccine. It is a toxic, it is a cocktail of toxins that introduce spike proteins, which has never been done and used in a vaccine, and heavy metals, and God knows what else is in those vaccines. So I would say, yes, the rates are going up. They're not going down. Mm-hmm. And the spike proteins can ignite at any time. Not to mention the fact that there are thrombotic and neurologic episodes that are also on the rise, all the autoimmune diseases, the myocarditis, you know, the thrombotic, you know, the brain clot, the clots, the strokes, the lungs, the heart, and then the neurological aspects to it, you know, all your immune diseases, lupus, you know, MS, you know, Parkinson's, Alzheimer's, these are all, the percentages are huge in those areas. People are walking around with like red rashes all over their bodies for the last 2 years, going to doctors, not knowing what it is. And it's the vaccines, and they're having a neurological episode that is causing these rashes. And then you've got kids with myocarditis off the charts. I mean, off the charts.
So what would be your recommendation if somebody is diagnosed, okay, whether it's because of the shot or just what happens? If somebody, you know, is diagnosed with cancer, what's the first thing they should do, Julia?
The first thing I did was get on my knees and pray, so I had a peace about the decision I was about to be faced with. And the second thing is diagnostics, and I mean real diagnostics. There are some blood tests out there and things that you, diagnostics now, that are blow your mind. It can tell you what's going on in your body, Zyto scans, et cetera, et cetera. I think the diagnostics are the most important part. Trying to figure out what's really going on. What is your body lacking? What is your body needing? And then looking at the mind-body connection, because in most cases, there is a traumatic episode that has occurred before you get a disease. And when I was at MD Anderson Cancer Center in 2000, they were starting a study looking at mind-body aspects to disease. So, you know, having gone through COVID, that's traumatic. You've got a bunch of kids now that have PTSD and anxiety disorders just because of either the COVID vaccines or the masking or the, you know, change of their life and the fear. But the mind-body thing, and they were actually looking at mother wounds, father wounds, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. So diagnostics are key, finding out what's wrong with you. Most people will look at a magazine, read an article about turmeric and say, oh, I should take turmeric. I should take curcumin. I should take vitamin C, et cetera. You have to plan it so that you're putting into your body the things that your body really needs. Now, in my case, I was very low in vitamin D. My level was like 30 on the blood test. That's in normal range in the United States. But when you have breast cancer, you need to be at 70 or 80 to have breast health, promote breast health. And then you've got all your off-label drugs. So I would tell somebody to get the diagnostics done. Have a peace about your decision through education. Become the CEO over your own body so that you're making conscious decisions every morning when you wake up. What am I putting in my body? What am I putting on my body? Creams, makeup, all, you know, toothpaste, mouthwash, shampoos, all of those things add to the environmental load. What am I putting in my brain? What am I doing to relax or pray or have, you know, where's my spiritual sense here? Where do I find my peace? And then your food, your nutrition. So it's conscious. And then the off-label drugs, which, okay, so blend in from the cancer world to the vaccine world, the off-label drugs, which have been, you know, we've been hearing are demonic and bad for you. And they're, you know, they feed them to horses and they shouldn't be feeding them to people.
Well, that's so, not true. They feed them to horses and people and they have for right. a period of time. Yeah.
But do. I'm just saying, like, they've been demonizing ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And I've been taking those things for 20 years on and off as maintenance. Okay. Right. So fenbendazole, niclosamide, berberine. Jane McClelland, who is from the UK, wrote the book, How to Starve Cancer. She's brilliant. She is the queen of off-label drugs and finding pathways for various cancers and what to use and what the dosing is. And I've seen miraculous things happen in people healing. Look, death is 100%.
Right.
But we have the choice to make of what the quality of our life is going to be. Are okay, we going to be?
I was just going to say, on that note, let's talk about the quality of life after this commercial, because I want to, on the other side, I want to talk about what Annie Appleseed does do globally and domestically here in the States.
I'm David Cross, and you may know me from my election integrity work, but I also own U.S. Asset Management, a family-owned and operated investment advisory practice. I'm a certified portfolio manager, and my job is to help you make better decisions with your money. One of the things we try to avoid is investing in companies that push the woke agenda. If you're invested with one of the big firms out there, there's a pretty good chance that you're feeding the beast that hates your values. Our company is 100% conservative, and we'd love to have an opportunity to work with you. Check us out at us-am.com and look for our big, proud American Eagle logo.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually. And keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and Ira. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
All right, so we're back with Julia again, and we're going to talk about the Annie Appleseed company. Julia, you're president of it, and this was started by Annie. Was it Fonfa? Is that you had to say your last name?
Yes, Anne Fonfa, who, yeah. Like me, decided to take a more natural protocol and was chemically sensitive and could not do chemo. So she had to find an alternative pathway. And we met 20 years ago. But I wanted to mention one other thing that's really, really important to remember. And that is that in New York, when she and I met, we met a doctor there who had just done a documentary, actually, about how Memorial Sloan Kettering hid the results of Laetril. That was there was a 10-year study, and there was a Japanese scientist there, Dr. Sugiura, Sugiura, and he was injecting mice with Laetril methodically for years and found that it was working, and it had a huge success. He had a hugely successful clinical study off of mice. And when the hires up found out, they tried to deem him a quack. Prior to that, he was a national treasure in their hospital. So there's other things also, there's 20 or 30 things that you can do to implement a complementary alternative plan or protocol for your body. But that was just one really important thing that I wanted to mention to you, because that was just the biggest cover up in the world.
So part of the problem I think people are having right now is that there's a lack of trust in the health industry. All right. And I think that at the same time, what we have seen in the last 3 years is a revelation that is new to some people because they believe in the medical divinity of the white coat. But we're also seeing, I think, the revelation at a tsunami level, the fraud that is in the medical journals. So the audience is going to say, how did you sift through this? Because your survival going back to 2000, that's 24 years ago, and you're in remission today, correct?
I'm healed.
You're healed. Okay, you're healed. All right. Elle McPherson is healed. She did something that was different. But how do people sift through if they believe in the medical divinity of the white coat? How do they sift through the fraud? Your organization is available for anybody to contact, right? Anybody in the world can contact you guys. So what's the first step? They contact you and then you... Tell the audience, how does this work? So because with the increase, people have to know where to go.
So they call us or they email us. And
how do they get in touch with you?
So there's our AnnieAppleseedProject.org, AnnieAppleseedProject.org. And we have volunteers. I'm a volunteer president of the Annie Appleseed Project. And we all work together to provide information. They call us, usually it takes about an hour. You're talking to somebody who is frantic, scared, crying, panicked that they don't know what to do. I calm them down, we start to talk. Most of it's about loving on them and encouraging them that, I'm gonna connect them to people and or information. So we've already done a lot of the research, right? So we can send them information that they can read. But what we like to do is connect them to our doctors, practitioners, and ambassadors. And I'm building this team now. I've been building this team up over the last year so that we have an army of people that can stand at ready to help people. And most of these doctors, practitioners, and ambassadors are doing this work pro bono. If you eventually become somebody's patient, then that's between you and them as to whatever. But every year we have an annual conference, and we are the only organization in the world that provides 50 free scholarships for people to come and attend our conference, which is a community gathering of love and encouragement and education every year in West Palm Beach. And when you walk in the doors, you experience the Annie Appleseed Project experience firsthand. We only serve organic food. We don't have any plastics. We have alkaline ionized water units in the kitchen of the hotel for drinking water. We have air purification systems. We have a very secure private banquet area. We have exhibitors that are bringing products and services and modalities for people to try. We have a treatment room where people can have acupuncture, PEMF, lasers, saunas, et cetera, red light therapy. We have doctors and scientists coming in globally to present. When you leave there after 3 full days, you have an arsenal of information at your fingertips. Not only that, but you're eating lunch with the doctors and the practitioners. You're getting to talk to them. We have free consults going on for people throughout the conference where you wouldn't even be able to get a consult with these doctors, and it would probably cost you $1,000, and they're doing it for free. So we are focused on providing the education and given in doses of love so that people have hope in a healing platform and can implement these things when they leave, or we help them when we follow them. So we're the only game in town doing this. There's nobody else doing this. And we have a donor that donates so that we can offer 50 free scholarships.
So the Dana-Farbers of the world, okay, those clinics that that treat people with cancer, how do they view what you guys are doing? I'm just curious about that.
They don't like us.
Okay, because you're preventing a holistic way of addressing cancer.
We're looking at our aim is from the patient perspective. What does the patient need? And in my opinion, the patient needs information so they can gather it all together and make informed decisions and not just have one decision made by the doctor. You have to make, I tell people all the time, you have to make your own decision. Just because your doctor says that you need this, this, and this, you need to research and find out what else is available out there. You need to become in charge of your own healing platform. So most doctors and most clinics, they have no clue about any of this stuff. I mean, IV vitamin C, IV alpha lipoic acid, hyperbaric treatments, PEMF, all these things. Most hospitals, they're starting to come on board, but they really don't know. And we don't want to interfere in someone that's having chemo. We want to give them immunotherapy through mistletoe injections and mm-hmm. other things that help them to get through the side effects of the treatment that they're going through. They can choose a completely natural protocol. Most people choose a combination, a cocktail of both, right? Because insurance pays for the conventional treatment and doesn't pay for the complementary treatments. But most of those are food and nutrition and rest and diet and lifestyle changes. And
What was the biggest lifestyle change that you had to make?
My diet. I thought I was eating really healthy. I was eating a Mediterranean diet, and most everything I was eating was not good for my body and not good for my cancer. And then the other thing was giving up my stress. Stress was a huge factor for me.
Is meditation part of the program that you suggest?
We do. We suggest, so at our conference, you can do breath work, you can do sound healing, you can do yoga, Tai Chi, Qigong. We offer all that on site. For me, it's prayer. Jesus is my guy, and that's where I get my fuel, but somebody else might get it through yoga or, other aspects of spirituality. But you have to have that higher power, whatever it is, because that's your fallback. That's what gives you the courage to make the decisions and to tackle this head on.
You know, there years ago, one of my childhood friends, who actually is a nurse, got her PhD, and her PhD was on hope. And what she found when she did the research, there wasn't a lot of research to build her PhD on. But what she did find at the end of the day is ovarian cancer was her qualitative focus of her PhD. And what she found was that people who actually have a higher a spirituality, for lack of a better word, I don't want to put it in religious tones, but a plan with their doctor and also having this higher spirituality actually had longevity and survival. And so being grounded when you're ill, I think is praying in depth, I think really can help people in a lot of aspects, regardless of their denomination. But the stress factor, laughter is the best medicine in the world. And gratitude. I agree with you. Gratitude is, and people who, trauma has a trigger for a lot of people, in terms of when you brought that up earlier about trauma, cancer trigger, have you guys done studies on that? Because I think the world has been traumatized by COVID. I really do.
I think
it's insidious the way we have just negated any sense of morality. in terms of gaslighting people.
I am totally with you. We're in the same lane. And there are lots of studies and there's lots of clinical trials that have gone on. They look at people and they look at sort of the 7-year mark, like 7 years before the onset of your disease, whether it's lupus or cancer or whatever it is. What was going on in your life? What was happening in your life? And more than not, you have this connection of some, you know, something really traumatic, whether it was a breakup or a divorce or a car accident or a surgery that, you know, traumatized your body or, you know, some sort of episode, right? Or, you know, you're still carrying around childhood trauma, which can be really relevant and can rear its ugly head, right? So people that have been in abusive relationships, have been raped, have had an abortion and regret this or that. I mean, there are lots of traumas that people are dealing with, but you're right. In the last 4 years, we have trauma on steroids from COVID because everybody was living in fear for 4 years. And that takes its toll on you.
I have a theory, and I don't know whether this even makes any sense, but I have a theory of people who have been abused as a child, sexually abused. Is there a correlation between having that trauma and not being healed and getting cancer? Has anybody done a study on that?
I don't know off the top of my head. I'm sure there is one. I actually participated in a study I told you at MD Anderson Cancer Center, and it was mother wound, father wound, mm-hmm. right breast, father, left breast, mother. And I'd have to go back and look at and see if they're still conducting that trial, but I thought it was very interesting. And I've seen a lot since then, but it really does make a lot of sense. Part of my healing platform was the reality that I needed to deal with my junk and flush out from my brain all the things that I've been carrying around. Because let's face it, we all have our true life resume and we all have the true life traumas that we've dealt with. And you don't realize it until you get sick and you're trying to detox all of that out. Going back to the beginning of my, when you asked me what was the first thing I did, first thing I did was pray. The second thing I did was detox. I did a 21-day juice cleanse fast to get everything out of my body that was in there and to make the ground fertile for what I was going to put in, which was new.
So explain to the audience, what is a juice fast?
So basically you 21 days, you're just doing juices. Most of mine were green. And or water with lemon or water with maple, a little bit of honey and cayenne pepper, things to get your colon cleansed because most diseases start in the colon, cancers, autoimmune diseases, any other disorders. We're all walking around with colon issues. You know, there's this whole microbiome studies that have been going on, and this is a hot topic right now.
Sure it is.
The microbiome is, you know, one of the keys to life. And so, you have a brain microbiome also.
So it's the healthy gut, as they say. That's what people absolutely want. So is it, do you not have anything but those juices for 21 days?
Yeah. And actually I did another one for 30 days. Like I used to do them quarterly, and I can't tell you how good I felt. It was really hard to do, Christine. It was really hard to change my diet and to stop eating all of the Italian food that I was eating. Pastas, cheeses, you know, meats, chickens, meatballs, whatever, right? So, right. You know, it was really hard. And then I'm doing wheatgrass and bok choy and kale and carrots and beets and, you know, all these juices, and it was really hard, but now it's just, you know, it's common to me, but yeah, it was very hard. And so I basically just did mostly water, lemon, sometimes a little pinch of baking soda makes your water, makes you alkaline. And then just mostly greens, cucumbers, kale, spinach, a little wedge of green apples, some ginger, and you just drink three or four juices a day. And I was doing shots of wheatgrass, which is, you know, 1 ounce of wheatgrass equals the nutrients that you would get if you ate like half of my desk in green leafies. 2.5 pounds of green leafies is what you get in 1 ounce of wheatgrass. So you're getting enzymes, minerals, superfoods, antioxidants, et cetera. And that stuff is like the bomb.
Do you guys have recipes on your website for people? I mean, because when I would assume that for some people that it, especially if they eat processed foods, all right, that this would be a whole new world to them to figure it out, because they really have to get it. I mean, do you have like a sort of a basics course for if somebody showed up at your conference?
So every conference we have a speaker that does a nutritional discussion. They do plant-based and and vegetarian, and they talk about how food is healing to the body. So every single conference we have a speaker, and on our website we have the videos of all of our speakers. So we always have an introduction to how you eat, and then they're eating at our conference. Everything at our conference is plant-based, so, and it's organic. So we have farmers that I know in Florida who deliver to us from their farms that morning, and the hotel, this amazing hotel that we go to, the Embassy Suites on Belvedere Road in West Palm, their chef cooks all of our stuff, all of our plant-based menus. And so we're getting this stuff with dirt on it, and they're washing it in the kitchen and they're preparing it for us now. You know, so there are other things, obviously, other than vegetables that are plant, you know, that we eat, that we offer. And people cannot believe the food. They can't believe how good it tastes, you know. And so we introduce everybody how to make changes, little tweaks, a little bit at a time. And then we have practitioners and doctors who can come alongside of them and continue to help them implement these things. And the food is great. You have to come.
Okay. You're selling me on this. You really are. One of the things I want to ask you is, why is it so hard to implement this type of approach of make America healthy again, as even Bobby Kennedy talks about? Why is it so difficult here in the United States?
Because people have been brainwashed into thinking that they can go and get a box of, you know, Lucky Charms and feed them to their kids, and it's fun, and they're eating breakfast and they're having a good time. I love Bobby. Bobby has got a, you know, big tie to Greenwich. I was on the committee to get him up there, you know, with his book tour. I am so excited about this. It's just because people are uninformed. They don't know what they're eating. They don't realize what is in the food that they're consuming. Pesticides, GMOs, you know, bioengineered foods, plastics.
I understand that, but Julia, why is it in Europe that people are ahead of this narrative more so than they are here in the United States?
Because you can't use all the pesticides and the GMOs in Europe. They don't allow it. I mean, people are eating essentially, farming there is much different than it is here. And so we're just consuming so much processed food, and there's just this lack of education. And we're fighting against the FDA and the CDC, you know, all these large organizations. You know, when you consider that, you know, six people own all the press, you know, the mainstream media, not yours, obviously. And, you know, six giants own the pesticide companies, the food manufacturing, you know, now buying farms. And, you know, making the plastics, you know, I mean, just aspartame alone just started causing so much disease when it came on the scene in the 80s.
So what we're talking about is overturning the education process and letting people know. Do we need to talk about what's going on in Europe to make people even realize here in America there is a difference?
I don't know that it's going to make a difference. I hope Bobby can sort of incorporate some of that into what he's doing. But we're fighting against a huge system here of you know, the food industries, the manufacturing of, you know, the foods. I mean, they're trying to put organic farms out of business.
Right.
Where, you know, we're bucking the system. And I applaud Bobby for taking that on because he is so brilliant. He's the guy to do it. He's been fighting this stuff his whole life. But we're fighting a huge system.
What about the people who sell supplements? I know that they're being attacked by the FDA as well. And if you don't comply with the FDA rules and regulations, I mean, even if you get a letter and you have to change your website in 48 hours, you're still on a list. You're on a blackball list.
Yeah.
What do people need to know about, I guess the Department of Agriculture and the FDA in terms of their own health? Because a lot of times people say, well, the government says this. They need to know what? That the government is not to be trusted in this area?
Yeah. I mean, there's organizations like the Environmental Working Group that actually look at food, water, you know, by zip code, you can check certain things like air quality, what's in your water, what's in food, what's going on. There are a lot of grassroots organizations that are doing that, but the education of that is massive because the mainstream media is not going to cover it.
When is your conference?
It's in February.
All right. And so do you have different themes, different years? Do you have like sort of a post-COVID conversation? Or is it just the focusing on lifestyle changes and also cancer?
So we present complementary and alternative medicine and alternative protocols for lifestyles and, you know, for changing your lifestyle. We are going to discuss some of the turbo cancer, and there's a doctor that's going to be presenting a lot of referenced material talking about that. We are going to touch on that. There are going to be some hot topics this next year because there have to be. We just present the information. And then you take it with you and you digest it and you do with it what you will. But we are basically, we're the house that has the education. We want you to come into the house and learn and experience and be able to walk away and hopefully be enlightened and make some changes. So you need to be there, Christine. We need to
cover, because I think now's the time to have these conversations because it lands on everybody's kitchen table. And in terms of the children, okay, the children that have been traumatized through COVID and also the children who have received these vaccinations, do you have any studies in terms of the numbers of the percentages of kids that are now getting? You mentioned earlier that, you know, brain cancer was showing up in some of the kids. What is happening with the children who've been injected with the COVID vaccinations?
I don't have statistics for you. I've got lots of articles that I've read and discussions that I've had with a lot of our doctors in Europe. Our doctors in Asia and Europe seem to have a lot more information. We have the kids are sick. And I know Bobby Kennedy knows this because he talks about it pretty much every time he's out there, just a travesty of what's happening with children. We don't have those statistics. I wish I did have those statistics. We just know that just from personal experience, kids are sick and they're getting sicker. And, you know, brain cancers are on the rise in children, and so is colorectal cancer. Young kids, I mean, you know, 13 to 17, 18, you know, why is this happening?
What about the whole notion of the mRNA in food? How do people get around that?
That's a good question. I don't have an answer for that, and I wish I did, but you have to be so careful about what you eat. And I can't imagine being a parent today and having to figure out what to cook for dinner for my kids and where am I going to get good, clean, healthy food. And I think that Bobby Kennedy is going to be able to help us with that. And it's so needed right now.
Well, Julia, again, how do people find your information for this conference? And how many people attend this conference?
300. It's a boutique conference. By the way, I created a discount code just for you.
Oh.
It's Dolan15. So anybody that comes to our website, annieappleseedproject.org, and clicks on the registration page, they can enter your code in for a discount for watching you and for thanking you for doing the amazing work that you do. Oh, I don't know how you do it.
Oh, it's, you know, we try to focus on helping people and getting them the information that they need. And it's important because we made a decision that we were not just going to cover COVID, but also cover the wellness, because coming out of COVID, I think people have to really focus on wellness and being healthy. So, you know, I appreciate what you guys are doing. I think it's really important. And unfortunately, it's desperately needed because of the uptake in cancer worldwide. It's not just here in America, it's also overseas.
It is. It's global. And the World Health Organization put out a, not that I read them very often, but they put out in their annual report on cancer that if we could educate individuals, communities, and countries on how to make better diet and lifestyle choices, we could reduce cancers globally by 30%. So that's a great statistic and it makes sense, but how do we do that considering what you just asked me about how do we fight the system of all of these chemicals in our foods?
Right. And we also have to remember that here in the United States, the manufacturers of vaccination have immunity. So do the medical device industry. And now the pesticide manufacturers want to have immunity. So we have to watch that here legislatively in the United States, because when somebody wants immunity, it's because things are not working.
It's true. And pesticides are and diesel fuel and now vaccines and diet and nutrition and stress are the top reasons for disease. So pesticides is number one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important for people to pay attention. Julia, thank you very much. And thank you for bringing this to our attention, because I think it's going to be very helpful for people. And thank you for the discount.
Okay. Yes, of course. And you're coming as my guest. So
see you soon.
I'll see you soon.
Thank you, Julia.
Thank you so much.